If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. Joining him is everyone's favorite coach and hair model, Chris, aka Tex McQuilkin, Power Athlete's Director of Performance. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I'm John Wellborn, CEO, founder, and big monkey here at Power Athlete.
10-year NFL athlete.
And Power Athlete, just too many athletes. But yes, I did play for a decade in the NFL. And I'll tell you, I'm pretty blown away. And I was telling you this the other day, I got a new TV. And we've been watching more NFL, and I'm completely blown away by the quality in which they're producing and like all the different camera angles. I mean, so much so I could see the wrinkles on Aaron Rodgers' face during the Packers game, and he looks old as fuck.
Well, he's still wheeling and dealing.
Well, he's killing it. I mean, it's got to be the ayahuasca. You think he's playing on ayahuasca?
No, I don't.
Be a bad deal. Thanks for coming on. Another episode of Power Athlete Radio, man. I mean, I know I'm a friend of the podcast. So, I mean, can you be a friend of the podcast?
I am the podcast. This is...
That's fucking...
Tex McQuilkin, the Director of Performance at Power Athlete Radio. And we are exploring BFR. Reason being, we now at shop.powerathletehq.com have our own BFR bands on sale now.
Yeah, I'm very excited. These have actually been in production for almost 2 years. So I wanted to create a very simple, easy band that had some notches on it, a few marks, that was easy to take, not overly expensive. Some of the systems you can go really deep. I mean, when we first got into blood flow restriction, Katsu Global was really the gold standard. Just the system and the way that they set it up was extremely expensive and very difficult, and it was hard for us to convince people to spend $7,000 or $10,000 on a blood flow restriction training system.
It was very hard. And we were able to hack it, basically taking some long
knee wraps,
long bands, folding them over 6 times to again then get them around the biceps. A lot of hacking going on.
Yeah, and the problem is when we were using the knee wraps and some of the systems we were using, there was no way to kind of make it repeatable. So big issue I always want to think about is hey, if I start at X and then I progress, how do I, continue to ramp it up a notch? And just being I think it's tighter. So I wanted to develop not only a fairly, not inexpensive, but just a very affordable band that we could push out to the entire Power Athlete ecosystem so that, price isn't the barrier to entry. And then I wanted to have all these little kind of notchy marks so that you could say, hey, you know what, if I'm going to start at, you know, 65, the next time I want to try to go a little bit tighter, because where people make a lot of mistakes with BFR is they go too fast, too far, and just they over.
Yeah, turn it into restriction versus occlusion.
Now the thing I want is, like, you want to occlude the muscle. You don't want to create a tourniquet.
So if you're watching on YouTube or Spotify video, which we are on, you can notice I'm not flexing too hard. Just I'm jacked and wearing these. So John, what's the essential walkthrough? So if I just purchase these, coach me up.
All right. So you're obviously going to undo the Velcro, and then you're going to slide them on. And what we're looking to do is get to the top, really between the shoulder, real high up into the armpit. And we're going to occlude the top of the bicep. So really the top of the arm, right in the crook of the arm. So where people make a mistake is they get it too low. I wanted to have it really high up into the armpit. You need to be able to do some movement with it, because part of this is going to be lifting weight. So it can't be restrictive, but it also can't be so low that it's in the center of the muscle belly. So I want you to think about the insertion up into the armpit and really at the top of that bicep.
Nice.
And then the for the legs, same thing, top of, like, kind of in the crotch, kind of top of the thigh, you know, like right between where, like, the thigh and the glute, kind of really high up into the, in the crotch, I guess is the only way I could think it. Where people make mistakes, too low, middle of the muscle belly. I want you to think about insertions and get it real high up in there, in that, you know, top of the quad, top of the hamstring position. And we're just going to occlude the bicep in here. Don't put them at the top of the calves. We tried that. That wasn't good either.
Yeah. Also, when you had the opportunity to interview Katsu.
So let's get into a little history on Katsu.
Well, just a note on that. They said, do not do that, because it leads to then blood clots in the calves, and then you travel and bad news.
Yeah. So I was fortunate to interview Dr. Sato, who is the creator of blood flow restriction. We drove up to LA. He was at a conference, and I got a chance to do a podcast with him, one that we never released because the audio was so terrible.
Well, and it was delivered through a translator.
Yes.
So in terms of the viewer experience, not optimal, but you were able to learn.
Yeah. So I think Nate was my audio video guy.
Odds are, I actually zoomed in for that one. So I was on the receiving end of the information only, which I'm not mad at. I had a great time.
Yeah, but it was beneficial. One, for the history. My first question was, how did it start? So he was a Olympic skier and a high-level skier. And he took a bunch of athletes up into the mountains to go ski. And while he was skiing, he broke his leg. So they casted him up, he got him, and realized that he was the only one that could drive a manual transmission. So he had to drive home.
With a broken leg.
With a broken leg. And the problem was, it was his left leg, which is the clutch leg. So what he did is he put a tourniquet, like a real tight piece of cloth up with a stick in the tourniquet, and kind of turned it. And what he was doing was, he was actually figured, like, hey, if I can reduce the swelling by reducing the blood, I could, you know, effectively drive home. So what he would do is he would kind of put it on real tight, shift, and then he was doing this kind of on-off deal. And he ended up, by the time they got back from the drive, he said his leg felt better than it did earlier. So he started using this kind of training where he was kind of occluding the blood. And he said that he was getting, like, an interesting quad pump from pushing the clutch in while it was occluded. And he said when he got out after, like, the 5 hours and the pushing, his leg was much more muscular and, like, looked more jacked, which I think is crazy seeing as the leg was broken. But he, you know, something had sparked interest for him. So then he started using this in his training. And in, like, relatively, I think they estimated, like, a 3 to 6 month heal, he was healed in, like, 3 to 6 weeks. Whatever was happening within the environment he was creating in the occluded muscle was not only healing the bone, but really ramped everything up. So he went back to the lab. He was a doctor working on, you know, exercise physiology, and they started using blood flow occlusion in their testing, and the results were anything but fabulous. I mean, things out of, like, a Marvel comic. So they started training the athletes, and the place that they really first tested it was with the Japanese speed skaters in the Olympics. So the Olympic speed skaters, if you guys want to do a little Google search, For those Japanese speed skaters from back in like, you know, whatever, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, their quad development was actually fantastic. And those guys were extremely powerful individuals. So they started using it kind of this kind of clandestine training method, almost hidden like, because it was providing an incredible advantage. And so what he ended up doing is they ended up putting in the lab, figuring out that what they were doing was occluding blood flow. So they were restricting venous blood flow, but not so tight that it was restricting arterial blood flow. So what was happening is as the blood was pooling, it was creating a very favorable anabolic environment. Growth hormone shot through the roof. They also had an interesting thing where normally motor units fatigue in an order. It's usually slow twitch, and then you kind of go down in this cascading effect till finally fast twitch. They found that motor units were fatiguing at the same rate at the same time. So they were able to access high tension, high threshold motor units very quickly. And it just provided a very beneficial environment for people that were occluding the muscles. The other side effect that I was really fascinated by was actually it created greater elasticity within the veins and the arteries. So by occluding them, which actually increased health, because you think about as you age, arteriosclerosis, where the hardening of the arteries, hardening of the veins, it was actually fixing that, and they were getting greater plasticity in veins and arteries from the occlusion. So not only were they able to build muscle in an occluded state with very light weights, but they were also able to heal muscles and create some really favorable environments in the occluded situations.
And then?
And then.
We started to apply it in training.
Well, I'm trying to remember where how it crossed my radar. It might have been very well that Katsu Global, who Dr. Sato was working with at the time, was local in Huntington Beach. And the guy who was kind of spearheading their U.S. division reached out to Cross the Football, John Welborn, Power Athlete. And we went over there, and it was a real short drive, went over there and took us through their system and actually gave us one of the Katsu Global systems, which were really killer. They were like a device this big. You plug the whole thing in, you plug in the cuffs, you hit a button, and it pumps it up with air. And I was like, man, this is really cool. You know, and I'm thinking in my head, dude, this would be great if we could use in the training programs. I wonder what the cost is. And I want to say it was like between like $7,000 and $15,000 for the units, depending on which one you wanted. And instantly I was like, ah, this is going to be impossible to sell this to the average gym consumer. So my next question was, when Dr. Sato broke his leg, what was he using for his occlusion? He's like, he was using a belt. And it was like one of those things where I'm like, okay, so like, is there a way for us to hack our way into this thing? Could we find a cheaper version? And of course there is. And so we started playing with, we originally started with the Voodoo Floss from Mobility Wad, from K-Star, from the Ready State. The problem with that is it was actually really painful and probably did more damage.
Well, for hairy guys, yeah.
Yeah. So then we started using leg wraps, knee wraps, like powerlifting knee wraps. And that was okay. We ended up ordering some tourniquets. I mean, we tried a million different things. The biggest issue we ran into is that none of them were thick enough. They were all real small, about an inch. And you need something a little bit thicker. I think these are around 2 inches. And the thicker, the thicker the band for the leg ended up being extremely beneficial because it covered more surface area. Whereas when we were doing the Voodoo Floss, they were real small, and then they would roll up and it would just basically turn into like a shoelace, which was extremely painful. So there were a couple things that we figured out pretty early that you wanted a thicker band in terms of width. And I also wanted a way to be able to measure progress.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing for me, especially with all these little notches. You can see the little ticks on here. I wanted you to be able to like, hey, day one, I was able to get to 60 and it was fine. And now all of a sudden I'm going to go 59, 58, 57. And then maybe, you know, we switch it up. And as your leg grows, maybe we go back in time and have a little bit of like, you know, almost a periodization, a little undulating periodization where now we're using kind of a light, heavy, medium approach for the individuals.
So sticking with that application guidance, I put these on and I'm not going as tight as I can.
Mm-hmm.
So speak to it. Just, we want to be 100% clear on the reason you have the notches here is for this point here.
Sure.
So coach us through again, where do I start? Because people are going to fuck it up to begin with until they don't.
Yeah. We ask everybody to start very moderate, which means like put it on so that it's just barely, you know, like a little bit of tension. You know, the one thing you don't want to do is really crank it up. And then we go for what's capillary refill, where all of a sudden you take and you kind of squeeze your fingers together and you should see it get white and then obviously get red again. Now, all of a sudden, if it's so tight that when you push it white, it stays white, now you've effectively gone too much. So we usually ask people to stay at like something that's where you'd notice it, but it's not discomfort for number one. And then we ask them to do, you know, anywhere from, you know, 15, 20 minutes of continuous exercise, trying to get a real good pump in the arms and the legs and just moving through full body, full range of motion movements. Normally, just some body weight tends to work for people most time. And then the next time we come in, pull a little bit tighter, pull a little bit tighter, always constantly checking capillary refill, where now all of a sudden I'm squeezing my fingers and I'm seeing it go white and then back to color, and making sure that everything is copacetic. Now, where I think where most people fuck it up is they go too tight too fast. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's like a linear progression. I want to keep, you know, mild discomfort and then kind of progress onto it once the muscle becomes more adept at it.
And how about weight selection? I feel people are going to also potentially get tripped up and going too heavy.
Yeah, I mean, around 30% is more than enough. We've tried it heavier. And what happened was when we started lifting heavier weights, it started changing movement patterns because of the occluded muscles. Like, let's say on the back squat, we tried to do this with back squat, where we were trying to squat 85, 90%, and it just didn't work out the way we thought it would. So actually going back and reaching back out to Dr. Sato, because I was fortunate after our meeting, he was somewhat very friendly and actually sent me a training program for me to try out. And I did. And it was lighter weights, somewhere around 30%. But the issue came down to training to failure. So if, you know, I put 155, 185 pounds on a back squat and I can squat 30 reps easily, I need to do 30, 40, 50 reps. So the idea is that you're actually working towards the end range of failure in the occluded state. So what we would end up doing is whether it be, leg extensions, hamstring curls, squats, arms, I mean, whatever it was, just finding different movements that we would work to failure. And then as soon as we would failure, we'd move to the next exercise and train a different muscle. So if I did push-ups to failure, mm-hmm. then I'd go over and I'd do some form of leg to failure and then go back and do tricep pushdowns to failure, and then, you know, calf raises or hamstring curls, and then go and do
curl,
you know,
anything.
Yeah, curl,
just pick
anything.
Something
just
up,
pick something
and
up,
curl it.
So when I was in Costa Rica, we went surfing, and I brought these BFR bands to play with, and was just basically doing Bulgarian split squats, air squats, holding a log, and then a bunch of push-ups and anything I could to do dips and curls and whatnot. And so the idea was to just train to failure and get a nice pump. And it ends up being I almost tell people, like, if you go too hard the first day, it's going to create almost a negative training effect. Just put it on so that you got a little bit of tension. And I just want you to move through for 20 minutes. Just keep doing the movements, keep working to failure. And then as you become more adept, like you do three workouts, then all of a sudden, maybe three more workouts, you kind of crank it up a little bit more. And then three more workouts where now all of a sudden it's a little bit tighter. Now, you know, another three workouts where it's a little bit tighter. And then go back and kind of go through different forms of period, like the different almost tightness. Like start cycling the tightness or the constriction. And at that point, maybe try to get more reps and or maybe put a little more weight on and just keep moving it. Really, it comes down to, if I can create metabolic stress by keeping moving to failure for 20 minutes, I'm usually right on board.
Nice. And so now exploring our different training programs, there's certainly a place for this in Jack Street, the king of all. And then our Field Strong, or I don't know if we'll explore this in Bedrock possibly, but Johnny Bod for sure, if you want to bolt that onto your little Bedrock program. But how can we apply this into the training programs? Like you said, go to failure. Now, how would that be explored and written into a training program?
So the way we would write it into a training program, and this is kind of an interesting piece that we know from the metabolic conditioning cycles, very similar to what Dr. Kramer and Boyd Epley put together for those Nebraska stuff. They knew that the only muscles would grow were the ones that they've trained the day before. So there is a definite training effect. Like, we would never just have this be a standalone workout. There's always going to be something heavy on the front side. Like, let's say we have heavy barbell back squats and bench press today. And then later on, we do some form of occlusion. Now, what we're doing is we're prepping. The workout would never just be occlusion.
Right.
Or we would never have somebody lift heavy weights under occlusion. The occlusion is always going to be the supplemental to your heavy training.
Now, just to clarify what you said about the Kramer, it was the same day or was it the day after in terms of we're going to expose our athletes to, we'll call it a heavy weight, and then the metabolic, the BFR, the PAMC, that's the day after.
Yeah, for the metabolic conditioning cycles, it's usually 24 hours later. What I felt was with the BFR, because the metabolic stress was in a different deal, in that, you know, what they were doing is doing some form of lactic bathing. We're kind of doing something in a similar vein, but actually I looked at it like to be able to do it in the same workout.
Okay. Yeah, cool. And I mean, it is less,
it's less demanding. So what we're doing, yes, is we're using the occlusion to create and pool lactic acid in blood and all these androgens in this space. So in a way, we're almost hacking into a very similar system that we found with the metabolic conditioning cycles. So as they started talking about like the physiology and the training in this, it took me back to the metabolic conditioning, mm-hmm, and realizing that the priming effect worked in a similar way. I could just kind of move it up a little bit in the cycle. So
yes,
in a way, what we were doing is, hey, you're going to go in and get your, you know, heavy training. We're going to do that. And then we're going to use this as an accessory to not only just get a ton of pump, but also drive all those hormones and androgens and all those really interesting stuff. I mean, there's also, you know, anybody who's ever watched Bigger, Faster, Stronger, Chris Bell's deal, where they talk about the myostatin bulls, mm-hmm, where the bulls were born without the myostatin gene. The myostatin gene is effectively a governor on muscle growth. So you see these huge, you know, ridiculous looking bulls that, you know, are like 1800 pounds that are just shattering the backs of, you know, cows when they go to mount them. Those bulls were born, and there's been certain humans that they've documented over time that were born without the myostatin gene.
Oh yeah. They're usually just pictures of the 7-year-old boys that are just ripped out of their minds.
Yeah. So what they found, especially with the blood flow restriction, actually there was a myostatin blocker in that deal.
Very cool.
So I think what happens is they usually subscribe, and the majority of kind of BFR is used within a PT clinic. And we've worked with lots of PTs and a lot of good ones, but the one thing that they don't teach in PT and they don't use very often in the clinic is weights, or heavy weights for that matter. So it's all very, very light.
Well, unless they're a power athlete coach.
Unless they're a power athlete coach. And then we have a very strong vein of PTs that have weights in the clinic and teach people to bang it. But most conventional physical therapy clinics, yes, when you go in, PT, they're going to use it with grandma. And the problem is there's no priming the effect. I think where power athletes been very different in the paradigm is using the research from Jerry Kramer and the stuff that we learned from the metabolic conditioning cycles, and understanding that you have to create the environment for the BFR to effectively work.
Yes.
And I had a long chat, I mean, through a translator with Dr. Sato about this, and he ended up co-signing off on it and was like, this is very true. Because, you know, we trained athletes where they did their sports and they just did BFR. The athletes that did their sports, lifted heavy weights and did BFR, got dramatically better results than the people that didn't lift heavy weights.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the idea of you know, neurological efficiency, you know, rate coding, inter and intermuscular coordination, all the great stuff we see within strength training happens under some form of heavy load, but there has to be a priming effect. And, you know, I mean, we're looking at two contrasting systems here, but the physiology is very universal. I think for the BFR, and why we've always just treated it as an accessory movement where, hey, you know what, like, you're going to get your meat and potatoes, and then we're going to do this on the accessory side. I think it's always paid very good dividends.
Yes. And what was cool during our third monkey is we were able to, since people had limited weights, we had them BFR during their strength block, their strength portion of the training, just to get a little bit more, because we knew their limitation, not necessarily their capability, but the weight that they could awkwardly load themselves in.
Yeah.
So they, aimed.
They just didn't have access to the uh-huh. weights that they needed, especially if you're coming out of a traditional weightlifting program or something where you own a barbell, and now you're, you know, in the middle of lockdown and COVID. So we were looking for kind of a max dose effect for what, you know, what they had available to them.
Yes. So expect, if you're a third monkey athlete out there, expect the daily dose. Mm-hmm. And what was cool about the Katsu thing that I recall was they had some wide receivers, some basketball athletes that they were referencing, and they had those guys running routes and doing their shooting and their skill work with the BFR cuffs on, not intensity like they would be at, say, a sports practice, but going through the reps. So then, do you recall any benefit to just, movement pattern in respect to BFR? So we're not talking like intensity and explosivity, but then the benefit of recovery going through your sport actions.
Yeah, I definitely think there was a recovery aspect that's beneficial, just because when you start bringing in all these different growth factors and all these, this really favorable anabolic environment or androgen environment, it's going to promote greater recovery. I think the muscles get stronger. I definitely have always kind of put a correlation with recovery and also that ability for blood to get to the muscle. And so the aspect of creating greater elasticity within the veins and also the arteries, just from like a longevity standpoint, one of the things that happens as we age is we start getting a hardening of the veins and the arteries. That's why you see like varicose veins and all these issues with older people, you know. So increasing blood flow, and by occluding it, then as a side effect, people that were actually having issues with their hearts, they had some research that supported that blood flow restriction was beneficial for those individuals in terms of increasing elasticity within the arteries, not only within the body, but also within the heart.
Yeah, Dr. Tom, in 2016, Power Athlete Symposium presented on how he was utilizing occlusion training for his elderly population, 59 to 71.
Yeah, he was using it with aerobic work. Mm-hmm. So they were putting them on the arms and the legs and then pushing them onto, I think he was using some form of elliptical, but also like an assault bike in that. And actually even the cross patterning motion under occlusion was beneficial to some of his elderly patients in terms of building muscle.
Yeah. Go ahead. Just on the sport side, I know in season training use, this took over the NBA. I'm not sure if it's still in practice, but since those dudes travel 82 games and basically on the road four nights a week and playing truly intensity. Some of those dudes are playing the whole game. BFR took over. So they were hitting their strength training following their NBA games with the objective of maintaining just performance, peak performance throughout the whole season. I know for a fact the Rockets were doing it when they were good, but then they are not.
Much like everything, people think it's the panacea. It's going to fix everything. It's going to replace it. Nothing is ever going to replace lifting weights in terms of athletic development and strength and performance. I've been saying it for over a decade, even longer than that. The two things that never got easy, the weights never got light, and the sprinting never got easy. I never got done sprinting thinking, oh, that was great, let's do that again. I never got under heavy load and thought, oh, wow, that feels light. Whereas I've done a lot of things where all of a sudden you accommodate or you start developing, some capacity to do it. But I continually look to the things that always suck. I think where BFR kind of went a little bit off the rails is that people started selling it as you only need to do BFR. So the effects of BFR can work, and they get into all the physiology, and we can get into a little bit of the physiology with a article on powerathletehq.com that Mr. Carl Case wrote, mm-hmm. outlining some of the physiological effects. For me personally, and from what I know from Dr. Sato and just our own research for over, seems like many years that we've been doing this, there has to be a priming of the pump effect. You have to do something heavy, whether it be something heavy or something, compensatory acceleration or something within those veins that involves some form of lifting weights, and then using the blood flow restriction as, obviously those are the primers. This is the fucking hit with the hammer to get it to explode. So without the primer, I don't know if you get the same explosion. So maybe for some of the elderly patients Tom was working with, just anything was better than nothing. But I think for when you start using it with athletes, it's easier just to throw the cuffs on them and let them think that they're getting something done. And they are. Not to say they're not. There is an effect, but it's dramatically increased when you start having that priming the puck, priming of the pump effect. Very similar with the metabolic conditioning cycles. Those work, but they don't work as well when you don't have the priming effect, lifting something heavy. And, you know, we always go, we go back to the statement that, Chris, or Tom had on the, when we had Newman? Tom Newman on the podcast, he talked about that you have to prime the muscle so that the bathing effect allows those muscles to grow within the metabolic conditioning cycles.
Yes. And the cool thing about BFR, like you mentioned, we can stack that in one day, but PAMC, you'll see it split in two, but that's the time for, that's a topic for a different podcast. How, what about grindstone? Cause we got, I won't call them elderly population, just some seasoned individuals out there with a minimal amount of time. How are you going to explore the use of BFR within the grindstone program?
What I do is I throw the BFR in there for an optional. So I usually throw some form of accessory, a little bit of bodybuilding at the end of every workout. So especially on the mandatory upper lower days, there's always going to be an accessory block. So what I'll do is I'll throw in, hey, if you have, here's the cuffs. This is how we're using blood flow restriction. If you have access to it, here's how I want you to do the accessory. If you don't have access to the accessory or the BFR, this is how the accessory is done. So I usually throw it into the accessory and then give two options.
So pulling on that thread, how, what would be the differentiation? Would it be sets, reps, weight? How would you split those two?
Usually with the blood flow restriction, there is, hey, I want you to pick a lightweight and you're going to do it to failure. So what I'll do is I originally start with people with a time, like get as many reps as you can in 60 seconds. And then from there, I need you to drop it, move on. And then when you, by the time you pick the next implement up, go through this cycle. Here's a little bit of deal. I want you to go for max reps, 60 seconds. Normally what I'll do, if they don't have the blood flow restriction, I'll usually ask anywhere from 8 to 12 reps, four sets, and I'll give them through there. And, you know, rest is needed, kind of superset it. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily throw, you know, pick a lightweight and just do it for max reps unless they're using some form of occlusion, just because I don't believe that there's similar, even though the research is really interesting when you start looking at training to failure. Is there a different effect from in terms of hypertrophy from four reps to failure, five reps, eight reps, 10 reps, 30 reps, 100 reps? You know, the research is kind of interesting in that you start looking at like, is hypertrophy all the same? Is it all? I think that there's definitely a different effect from 8 to 12, 5 to 7 reps than there is from 30 to 100 reps.
Yeah, you get bored.
Yeah.
Lose count.
Well, it's also really hard when you start getting into like 100 reps of something and it's super light. You're just like looking around like, fuck, this sucks. Whereas I think you can wrap your head around something to failure for 8 to 10, 8 to 12 reps.
Yes, big time. All right. I did pose some questions to our Power Athlete Coach Network that they have on occlusion to throw your way, John.
Okay.
All right. Question from Coach Anderson here. Is there a plateau effect as with training modalities? Imagine, you know, I guess switching bars, different things like that in that vein. So is there a plateau effect with using BFR?
I don't think so. The reason being, and actually Tom Newman had a great comment that he made to me recently when we were wrapping on something else. Every 3 degrees of variation, not only with a bar, but also a grip, foot stance, everything, targets a different muscle. So what happens if you want to continue to drive past, let's say, the accommodation effect or, you know, this kind of plateauing effect, you're constantly picking different grips or attacking it in different ways. So if we're, you know, there's a million different ways to train the bicep, you know, in that are the same curling method from different grips, different this, different implements. So I think what happens with the plateauing effect is if you're doing the exact same grip, exact same movement. So that's why I really shoot for a ton of variety, especially in the accessory. There's a, you know, I have 100 ways to attack the shoulders and I want you to use them all. When you lay down to bench, I always ask, and I actually got this from Louis Simmons on the dynamic, you know, if you're going to do 8 sets of 3 on the dynamic, they would go force, you know, every 2 sets, they would actually keep moving their grip out. And, you know, never chewing the same grip more than twice. And because it trains a different muscle, different neurological effect. So I think you get a plateau effect when, you know, so I used to hate in the 80s, remember muscle confusion?
I'm still confused, but go on.
There was a whole training effect called muscle confusion. CrossFit, you know, got into it with this constantly varied, I believe.
Oh, the black box, the magic.
I believe constantly varied is good for training ADD. I don't want you to do the same thing every day. Unfortunately, if you want to get really strong, you have to do the same thing over and over again. So, I mean, what are we training for? We train for fitness. We train for strength. So what we can do is we can give them a dose of the stuff we need to get them real strong. And then we can add enough variety in the accessory work to continue to drive adaptation.
That's good. Asked and answered. Any medical conditions that would omit somebody from using BFR training?
I think that you should consult a doctor before embarking on any training program. Now, with that said, and just to get that legal thing out there, if you have some form of heart or some, you know, neurological things going on in your brain with like brain aneurysms or something going on that involves surgery, I think that you should consult your doctor before embarking on anything that looks like occlusion. But I think for healthy individuals, assuming they've talked to their doctor and are healthy, I don't see any need to modify. So, but if you have something going on that either looks like, some form of vein, what is it, like thrombosis, or, you know, let's say you're diabetic and you got terrible swelling in your legs, AFib, congenital heart issues, broken valve. I mean, anything that looks like something gnarly, I think you need to consult your doctor and ask them, is blood flow restriction applicable and usable for me as an individual? The only issue comes down to doctors are not usually exercise physiologists. So make sure you get checked out. Go see somebody knowledgeable. Just don't go down to your local county sheriff doctor who is probably in there smoking a cigarette, eating a donut, trying to give you nutrition advice. So there's also this thing called Google, which I don't like to Google this stuff. But I definitely think if you have some form of health issue going on, I think go to the Google box, enter it in, put blood flow restriction, and look for anything that pops up with any type of complications.
Yeah. Sometimes that's scary.
Don't fuck yourself up.
All right. And this is in line with injuries. We blanketed the answer with the injuries, but this is specific towards tendonitis. What consideration should be made when using BFR for strength and hypertrophy when compared to rehab of tendonitis? For instance, are there certain rep schemes to use, types of resistance, or possibly utilizing EMS, electro stimulation, that will work better for one but not the other?
Okay. Repeat that again. Wait, just read that one to me again. See if I understood it right.
Yeah. Antonio, note the time.
Yeah, note that. Yeah, read. Wait a minute. Read that one again for me, dude. So just, I'm not going to fuck this up.
Consideration should be made when using BFR for strength hypertrophy when compared to rehab for tendonitis. So we're using BFR for strength, we're using BFR for rehab. Is there, I guess, a difference? The example this coach provided are certain rep schemes to use, types of resistance, were utilizing EMS that would work better.
Okay, yeah, the EMS thing kind of threw me for a loop. All right, so we have two different modalities here he's discussing. Blood flow restriction and EMS are two different movements, right? And obviously EMS is going to be electro muscle stimulation, and the EMS devices we use with PowerDot and Compax and whatnot, the idea that there's a certain frequency and intensity that you can put on with the pads that's going to recruit motor units. So a lot of times, due to injury, age, or other contributing factors, you'll get a down regulation and motor units won't fire. So by using the EMS device, we can effectively to get indiscriminate motor unit recruitment based upon where the pads touch, which means that if I put the pads on, we're going to basically short circuit the nervous system and go right from the muscle. And we're just going to use the device to fire the muscle, where if you have an injury, the brain is going to have neurological inhibition through the central nervous system and whatnot to reduce firing patterns within an injured muscle. So for example, if you had, let's say, patellar tendonitis, one of the key factors for patellar tendonitis is the pain inhibits the VMO and the quad from firing. So one of the ways that Dr. Buehler deals with patellar tendonitis is he actually works the quad, all the muscles of the quad, to make sure they're firing, and then also actually activates the hamstring, because what happens a lot of times is when the hamstring shuts down, it doesn't stabilize the knee the way that it should. And then all of a sudden the tendon gets lit up and then it shuts the quad down. And then you get into a ton of chance for injury. So what we end up using is the EMS device to short circuit that injury, get the hamstring to fire and get the quads to fire and start recruiting motor units, in the idea that by recruiting the motor units, we can effectively get the muscle to fire in a more beneficial pattern. Now, blood flow restriction works in a different way, in that we're actually occluding the muscle and getting blood to pool. Mm-hmm. And then as you're in this training effect, you're getting a down regulation of motor, of a fiber type. So normally you kind of go through this cascading effect we talked about earlier, where you get slow twitch muscle fibers, and then you get to those medium muscle fibers, and then we finally get to those X fibers, those high threshold ones. Now, fiber type ends up down-regulating at the same rate in that environment. So there's not necessarily a function of motor unit recruitment with blood flow restriction.
Right.
But what we're effectively doing is we're creating this extremely beneficial environment. I mean, it's almost a hypoxic environment. It's what we're doing, right? Reducing venous blood flow, but we're not restricting arterial blood flow. And the pooling of the muscle, if you want to get into some of the effects, like increased growth hormone, what were some of them?
I got it right here. Increased fast twitch muscle fiber recruitment, elevation of free testosterone, increased growth hormone secretion, and cellular swelling.
Okay. So, but there's also, so increased growth hormone. We also know there's a myostatin blocker, and we know that it's creating a favorable androgenic environment. So if I was an intelligent PT and I was looking to rehab an individual, I would use some form of EMS device to create indiscriminate motor unit recruitment. Mm-hmm. And then once that happens, right, I would probably use it in a pre-training environment. Then I would set them off to lift some weights. So we actually did EMS while we were lifting weights, which ended up kind of being a shit show. So we ended up using it before lifting weights and then using the BFR after the training. So I would actually split it into three parts. I do it in a pre as kind of a priming of the pump effect, let them lift weights, and then finish them up with a little BFR. The idea that we're going to recruit it, we're going to use it, and mm-hmm. then we're going to bring in some healing to fix it.
Excellent. I hope our coaches are taking note. I think that was for a selfish application, but if you got athletes out there, or if you're a PT, listen closely. Well, we can expect to find these making their way. I'm already getting bigger. I've been occluded this entire episode.
Dude, you're looking yoked. You're looking fucking
yoked. Not even do anything. Yeah, I'll just put this underneath my polo for Saturday night. You can find these at shop.powerathletehq.com, and they will be making their way into our training programs, Jack Street, Grindstone, Field Strong for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited about these. We have been... I mean, there's some amazing systems out there. Smart Tools has an amazing system. Ketsu Global. There's some Be Strong. I mean, there's some really great blood flow restriction training systems. They just have a higher price point. So what we ran into, and I definitely recommend, if you got some available income and you want to spend a couple hundred dollars, or you know, $500, $750, $1,000, and you really want to get deep into this, I think that that option is there, and I support the hell out of those companies because I've used them all. You know, I have the Be Strong system. I really think the Smart Tools is really, really intelligent and very heady. The issue comes down to when you're trying to implement into a training system for, you know, 5,000+ people a day, price is always going to be a consideration. So just bring out a Power Athlete branded set of bands that are very inexpensive, easy to try. So if you want to give it a try, you don't have to invest a ton. If you get into it and love it, there's always some more expensive systems that we can turn you onto. But in terms of a gateway, getting you in a very simple, easy to use system that also is measurable and repeatable was very important. And man, I've been waiting on these for a while. I mean, this is 2 years in, you know, not only idea, but also getting to production. And there's been a bunch of supply chain issues that we've run into. That was also a very difficult one, finding a company that would produce it and then also make sure that we got stiff enough Velcro and the material was good, that it has just a little bit of flex, but not too much. and then being able to get our branding and just a lot of factors to get the right material and bring a good product to market at a good price.
Yeah, they're very battle tested.
Yeah, they're legit.
Put them through the ringer, leg day, arm day every day. And there you have it. That's an excellent breakdown, John, of BFR and the benefits and how you will experience it on Power Athlete training programs. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Power Athlete Radio.
Thanks for having me as a guest or a friend of the podcast on Power Athlete Radio. Thanks for tuning in.
You've proven yourself. I think you've graduated to guest. Co-host is on the horizon.
Oh, man. I just figured, yeah, I mean, you know, well, we got the right skulls on the wall, so now we're ready to move ahead.
If you've been watching on YouTube, you can see me just get more and more vascular throughout this whole episode experience. What we need is reviews. That's what we're lacking on iTunes. We need some social proof, as they call it, that you're out there listening and enjoying it. Drop us 5 stars. Spotify's got they got stars. They don't have reviews.
Yeah, 5 stars.
So if you're feeling creative, drop us a review on iTunes. We will read that on the show. If you're just feeling lazy, head to Spotify, hit us with 5 stars, and we'll be very grateful. That's very beneficial for us, believe it or not. Throws us up in the algorithm, and it costs you nothing, listener. So until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.